Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Really happy today to have Sam Thayer with us to talk about midsummer foraging for berries, greens, and a whole lot more. Sam's a lifelong forager, the author of The Forager's Harvest and Nature's Garden. And Nature's Garden won another award since the last time Sam was on. I think he was on in June with Judith. Forward Book of the Year in the Nature category. And it is a wonderful book, and we're really pleased to have, I'm really happy to have the book in front of me and to have Sam on the phone to talk with you and with me about what we can find out there at this time of the year. You have a question? Do you forage? What's your favorite location? What do you find there? Maybe you won't be quite so specific about what that spot is, but maybe you will. You have some memories of foraging for berries as a kid or in recent years? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also go to our Facebook page and post photos there or post some questions or comments there. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there as well. Sam, welcome.
Good morning, Larry.
It's great to have you back. And I'm really blessed to have a copy of this book in front of me. Nature's Garden is just an absolutely beautiful book, and you're richly deserving of that award. It must have been a great feeling to receive that award.
It was. The book also won a Midwest Book Award, but really this one, it was a bigger deal to me. And I put so much work into the book. It's been really satisfying to hear from readers that they like it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, your book, Nature's Garden, has a great calendar for when food is at its peak for foraging or still present but declining. What's at its best right now here in midsummer?
Well, you know, we're a little bit late this year, just like everybody's gardens. We're, you know, 10 to 14 days late. It's about peak right now for red raspberries pretty much throughout the state. They kind of have a long season. And it's about peak right now for service berries in the northern part of the state, where there's a lot more kinds than there is in the southern part of the state. And black raspberries are just kind of waning down now. And a few blackberries are coming into season. So those are kind of the big things right now.
So we had a Facebook comment from Brian, who is vacationing in the UP. They've been making wild blueberry, thimbleberry, and raspberry jams, and the Yellow Dog Plain between Scanty and Big Bay, Michigan, is 30 square miles of solid wild blueberries and more than you'd want to ever be able to eat.
Yeah, you know, there are some, you know, Wisconsin, really the whole upper Midwest is a berry picker's paradise, and there's just a lot of areas that are just enormous that are, you know, you mentioned that some people might not want to give away their good foraging spots, but some of these foraging spots cover miles and miles, and you can tell the world, and they're not going to be, you know, too crowded to go there.
Yeah.
There's the Mukwa Barrens in the Bayfield Peninsula, which is regionally well known for blueberry picking. There's a lot of good service berry picking out there, too, and sand cherries and choke cherries. And people come from miles around, and sometimes in the summer there might be 200 people, 300 people on a good day, but they're spread out over a 75-square-mile area,
yeah.
So it's not crowded.
Not crowded at all. Well, Elizabeth in Door County has a question or comment for you, so let's go there. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. Hey, Sam. Thank you. Got your book. We use it all the time. I was lucky enough to get to forage with you a little bit at the gathering on Lake Superior a few years back. Two things. I'm planning on seeing you again at the United Plant Savers event coming up. I'd love it if you would tell folks about that and maybe a little bit about United Plant Savers. Also, I know that there was a time back when we were all foragers, and we probably had thousands. I've seen estimates over a couple thousand different foods that we routinely consumed. Now we're down to about 19 different foods make up 98-99% of our diet. Thought you might want to talk about that a little bit. So thank you for your work. Love your books.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, well, the first comment, the United Plant Savers Conference, their annual conference is being held in Lafarge, Wisconsin, or near Lafarge this year. The event's going to have a bunch of different educational programs over it's 2 weeks, a week from this coming Saturday. Plant Savers is just a great organization of people that love plants, love wild plants, and are concerned about their future. So I encourage anyone to look into that if you're a plant lover like me, like I know a lot of the listeners are.
Sure.
Now I forget her second. Oh, a second point about the variety of foods people consume. I mean, that is certainly true, and that's something that there's a lot of discussion of that in the anthropological literature and in the nutritional literature. You know, our diets just have become progressively more and more simplified, and we get most of our calories from a very small number of species. When you increase your diversity, you increase your nutritional balance. And anthropologists have found that hunter-gatherers that they've looked at, their diets, have incredibly balanced diets with excellent amounts of all the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals. So foraging is a great way to not only have a lot of fun and get really good food, but have a really good balanced diet.
Thanks, Elizabeth, for calling. Appreciate it. Marilyn in Montfort, on to you now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. This is a great program and a great time because there is so much available right now. I just happened by coincidence to fix a Thai vermicelli soup that I added purslane to, and it turned out really well, and there's a lot of that out there right now.
Yeah, you know, purslane is a great vegetable, and almost every gardener is familiar with it because almost everyone has it as a weed. A lot of people don't know that it's also been cultivated for thousands of years, and there's varieties you can buy in seed catalogs, which are really similar to the weedy wild kinds, just with bigger leaves. But the wild ones make a great vegetable. They're kind of tangy, and they're, you know, it's this plant with a small, kind of spoon-shaped, thick leaves, jade plant-like leaves that grows in people's gardens. I really like it raw, but there's tons of traditional recipes for it, and it's super high in iron.
Oh, good to know. Thank you, Marilyn, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in as well at 1-800-642-1234. Steve in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. Love your show. I just wanted to make a comment that you don't have to go very far afield to get Juneberries. About 3 weeks ago, I was biking down a street that is lined with service berries or Juneberries. There had to be about 25 trees all in a row. And they were at their peak, and I could have picked buckets upon buckets of Juneberries, you know, right in the middle of the city. And I'm guessing that there are a lot of cities that have boulevards just loaded with Juneberries. So it's something for your listeners to keep an eye out for.
Hey, why didn't you call me?
and I think they're wonderful. To me, it's very similar to, you know, they're the same size as a blueberry. They're, you know, they have very tiny seeds, but they're incredibly tasty. So I was using them just like I would eat blueberries.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's the most underappreciated berry we have in Wisconsin. Juneberries, also called service berries or Saskatoons, they're called, particularly in Canada. They're delicious, and people ignore them. I actually had an interesting encounter a few years ago where someone asked me what I was picking in the Hayward area, and I said, "Oh, I'm picking service berries." They didn't see me actually out picking, but they could tell I had been picking berries because of the stains on my hand. And they said, "Oh, we've never picked those, but we love blueberries, especially the ones that grow on trees. Those are the best ones." And I said, "Well, there aren't any blueberries growing on trees." And the guy said, "No, we pick them all the time." I said, "Then you're picking service berries." And he's like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah, they look kind of like a blueberry, but they're closely related to an apple." And, you know, and I think I love blueberries, but I like service berries even more. We dry them a lot. We make a fruit leather or just dry the whole berries, and, man, it's delicious. And then all winter long, we get to eat them and remember the berry-picking trips we took during the summer.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing about the service berry is, you know, in the city, it's one of the very first trees to bloom. So it's easy for people to spot them. And if you just remember where they are in your city, you know, go back there 2 months later and you can feast on them.
Thank you, Steve.
And, you know, over the past 15 to 20 years, they've become a fairly popular landscaping bush.
Yeah.
And generally, you know, they're in parks or they're in places where it's perfectly fine to go pick them, and you're not harming the tree in any way. And if you can beat the birds to them, they're great. The problem we have where I live in northwestern Wisconsin is we only have some of the early ripening varieties of service berries, and when they ripen, there's not a lot of other fruits available, so the birds just pick them all off before they even ripen. But if you get to areas that have a really good crop of service berries where it's a little bit more abundant, or there's some of the later ripening varieties, then you can find trees that are loaded just incredibly. I've picked 6 gallons off one bush.
It's great. Oh, thanks again, Steve, for calling. Appreciate it. A couple of Facebook comments, one from Mary Beth. Maybe we can eliminate the garlic mustard menace by eating it all. Any good recipes for garlic mustard? Is it even half as healthy as I've heard it is?
Well, there's a nutritionist named John Kalis who specializes in wild plants, and he used to say that lamb's quarters was the most nutritionally dense food that had ever been analyzed. But now he's changed his tune, and he says that it's garlic mustard. I'm not real familiar with the nutritional profile, what specific vitamins and minerals are in it, but I've heard that it's and read that it's incredibly nutritious. It makes a good pesto. And the other thing is I like the stalks right before they flower. And it's usually about the 10th of May or the 15th of May before they flower. They don't have as strong of a garlicky or as much of a pungent mustard taste as the greens do. So I'll collect them in early spring and use the stalks in soup or just steam them and eat them like asparagus.
We have Mike in Ozaukee County online here. Mike, hello.
Hello. I've got a question here. There's not too many, you don't find too many blueberries, at least I haven't, in Ozaukee County area. Southern Love, let's just say, in the Kettle Moraine area. However, there's an area where I did find some blueberries, and then I found these other berries that I think are huckleberries, but I can't find a good description. I thought they were similar to the blueberry bushes, only they were a little taller, bigger leaves, glossy leaves, though. The berries were bluish, blackish, and had maybe a glossy skin to a tougher skin. Could that possibly be a huckleberry? And if it is, are they edible and are they any good?
Well, it could be a huckleberry. The key distinguishing feature of huckleberries and blueberries is that the huckleberries have a crunchy seed. It's unmistakable. You can't put them in your mouth and try to eat them without noticing. Huckleberries are very common in certain parts of Wisconsin. They greatly outnumber blueberries in the sand counties. So particularly Burnett County, and then in the central part of the state, Jackson, Eastern Monroe County, Juneau, Adams County, and Southern Portage County, they're found statewide, but they need sand, and they need to be just above the water table, or this is going to seem counterintuitive, the other place you find them is on top of sandstone ridges in hilly country.
Hmm.
And virtually never find them outside of those situations, but in the right situations, there's places where there's tens of thousands of acres of huckleberries. I think they're delicious. They're as good as blueberries.
Okay.
And in Crex Meadows Wildlife Area, they ripen a little later than blueberries, about 10 days to 2 weeks later. In early August to mid-August in Crex Meadows, there will be a lot of pickers out. Last year was the best crop of huckleberries I've seen in years, at least in northwestern Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And every day that I went out picking, I saw other pickers, but there was so much space to pick in. We weren't, you know, stepping on each other's toes
right
at all. I think they're great. They're great in pies. They're wonderful. But if it looks like a blueberry, you think it's a blueberry, but it's a taller bush, bigger leaves.
The fruits are not, but it's more of a glossy fruit sort of. If I remember, this was last year, and it was glossier. The blueberry, you know, has that kind of a dull finish, possibly, whereas this was a glossier A little bit bigger, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a powder that's on the skin of most blueberries, but not all. We have two species of blueberries in Wisconsin. They're both lower blueberries. But one of them does have larger leaves than the others, than the other. And sometimes people do call the darker blueberries or the blueberries that don't have that powdery bloom on them, we'll call those huckleberries, but they're not. But that's usually only in areas that don't have huckleberries. In areas where there are huckleberries, people tend to know the difference.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sam Thayer, our guest today, as we talk with him about midsummer foraging for berries, greens, and a whole lot more. He is the author of Nature's Garden, a guide to identifying, harvesting, and preparing edible wild plants. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Continuing our discussion with Sam Thayer about foraging for berries and greens and more, join in with your questions. We have open lines, get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page and post there at The Larry Mueller Show. One of our coworkers said that there's a tree that's bursting with berries in her neighborhood in Madison, Sam. She thinks it's a mulberry tree. Is this the right time for mulberries in south central Wisconsin?
You know, it's a little bit late, but I would suspect that some of them would still have fruit. Mulberries usually peak around the end of June to the first week of July, but it wouldn't be unheard of to find some this late. There also are varieties of mulberries that have been bred for having a long bearing season, and so it could be one of those. But a mulberry is fairly unmistakable in that it's a full-size tree with a fruit that looks like a blackberry. It's pretty hard to mistake anything for a mulberry.
A listener in Pewaukee just wanted to remind people to ask for permission before foraging on private land. She's had the experience of going out to harvesting from her own property only to find that foragers had already cleaned it out.
Yeah, that's definitely not a good idea. It's just, as with hunting or fishing, trespassing and picking things without permission is definitely a no-no.
Yeah, absolutely. Barbara in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Hi, Barbara.
Hi there. I have a comment about huckleberries that after a first frost, they're nice and sweet, but prior to that, you will never eat an unripened fruit of the huckleberry because it's very bitter. And that way you don't have to worry about anybody coming along and picking them and eating them prior to a first frost. That's my comment.
Are you sure you're talking about a huckleberry? Because I rarely ever find huckleberries as late as there would be frost.
Okay, I might be wrong then.
But, you know, a lot of times huckleberry is an interesting name because it's just thrown around with a lot of fruits. Like, people don't know what it's called, so they call it a huckleberry. And for instance, in the western states, what they call huckleberries are any blueberry that doesn't taste like the classic blueberry flavor. So if it's kind of sour, they call it a huckleberry out west. The eastern huckleberry is very distinct. You know, it's in a different genus than the blueberries, but it doesn't sound like you're describing a huckleberry. What's the color of the berry that you're speaking of?
Very dark blue. It looks like a blueberry.
Okay. And what areas do you find it growing?
Well, these are started from seeds. They were growing them at Old World, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay, okay. And so it's an annual plant?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a garden plant? Okay, yeah. They're great. That's a perfect example of the name huckleberry being thrown around. What you have there is a plant known as black nightshade, but the seed sellers know that if they sold it under the name black nightshade, people wouldn't buy it because it sounds bad. Well, this is a very popular berry that's eaten all over the world, and some varieties are grown for the berry. And so they can't sell it. So they also might sell it under the name chichiquelite, which is a Spanish Mexican word for that. It's related to a tomato. It's like a miniature tomato. And yes, if they are underripe, they're very bitter. They're also like unripe potatoes. They have the same toxin, solanine, as unripe potatoes. So when they're green, they're very bitter. Definitely should not be eaten. But when they're ripe, the flavor is kind of like a ground cherry, which is another nightshade family fruit. It's sort of like a sweet tomato flavor, and I actually really like that. We'll make a jam from it, or we'll put them in tacos or in burritos. I just kind of like nibble on them. But that's a plant that does ripen with the frost. It probably peaks in early October.
Okay.
All right. There you go.
So you weren't mistaken. It's just the name Huckleberry has been used that way, and I sometimes think it's irresponsible for the seed catalogs to change the names of plants to make them sound more appealing because it creates this confusion. You know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Barbara. And James in Richland Center. On to you now. Hi, James.
Hi. I was just wondering if your expert could speak about smooth and staghorn sumac. A lot of people have a conviction that it's poisonous, and I've heard otherwise.
Oh, that's a great question. We have four native sumacs to Wisconsin. There's the poison sumac, which is sometimes classified with the other sumacs, and some botanists put it with poison ivy. It's very closely related to poison ivy. And then there are the sumacs with red berries, staghorn, which is the common sumac that most people see and think of as sumac with the upright clusters, cone-like clusters of fuzzy red berries. And then there is smooth sumac, which is found almost statewide except for the northeast corner and north-central part of the state. But smooth sumac is more predominant as you travel west and south in the state. It's more of a prairie plant, and it also has upright clusters of red berries. They're just not fuzzy, and the stems aren't fuzzy. And there's also one that's uncommon. You shouldn't collect it in Wisconsin, at least in the wild, and that is fragrant sumac, but it's commonly grown as a landscaping plant, and this is a very small cluster of fuzzy red berries. All three of the sumacs with red berries, the berries can be soaked to make a lemonade-like drink. And if it's made right, and when I say made right, you have to pick the berries when they're very flavorful. Some years they don't develop a lot of flavor, and sometimes the flavor gets washed out by the rain because it's water-soluble. But if you pick the berries when they're just right and soak them in, I like to soak them in cold water so I don't get any flavor from the stems that soaks out, it makes a really nice lemonade-like drink. And some people also will soak the berry heads and make wine from that liquid. Some people also will make jelly from that. I think it's great. There's a lot of neat stuff to do with the sumac. So the poison sumac has a totally different looking berry. The clusters, they hang. They're like grape-like drooping clusters of round white or kind of ivory or creamy colored berries. There's really no way that you could pay attention and confuse the two. And poison sumac is found in about the southern half of the state or so in very different habitat. It grows only in swamps. It's fairly common in the cranberry country in the central Wisconsin, and then in scattered swamps throughout southern Wisconsin, you'll find poison sumac. But it's not likely at all that you would confuse it in any way by sight.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, James. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quick. Todd in Madison emailed, says, I just found a bunch of cinnamon chanterelles, is that correct, in a park in the middle of downtown Madison. I'm looking forward to finding more with the rain that we're having.
Well, you shouldn't say that on the radio, because now there's going to be 30 or 40 people looking at a map going, which park is it? And they'll be out there looking. So, this is about the beginning of the chanterelle season, and I haven't found any yet this year. Last year was a great year for chanterelles, and chanterelle is a small mushroom that doesn't have true gills. It kind of has folds underneath, and different species are either yellow, or there's a very bright red one called the cinnabar red chanterelle, which I'm assuming is the one that he's talking about. They tend to be a little bit smaller, and they're most common under oaks, but you can find them in a lot of other situations. And, I like them. Chanterelles have almost an apricot scent to them. And then there's the black trumpet, which is also sometimes called black chanterelle, which fruited really heavily last year, and that's my favorite. Those are grayish or blackish funnel-like mushrooms.
And then how do you prepare them?
you know, I take the black chanterelle is one of the mushrooms that I think is even better dried than fresh. And we dried a whole bunch, and I'll crumble them into wild rice. I'll crumble them into a soup. They're great in omelets. My wife absolutely loves it when I make her an omelet with the black trumpets in there. Gosh, you know, they're mushroomy, but they have like a cheesy, like almost a Parmesan cheese overtone, but then a fruity scent mixed with that. It's a very strange combination, but I think it's a really good combination. And, you know, I haven't put them in much of any savory dish yet where I didn't think they were good.
We have a Facebook comment from John, who says, Forager's Harvest was one of the first books on foraging I bought. Now I'm a constant forager. I moved to the woods in Wisconsin a month ago, and my yard is full of nettles and other wild greens that end up on my plate almost every day. And I have Mr. Thayer to thank for it. I look forward to his talk this weekend. Yeah.
Well, it makes me feel just wonderful that I wrote this book and it's done that for people. I mean, I just tried to create the book that I was looking for when I was getting into foraging. And, you know, I talked to people at my workshops to say, what would you want in a foraging book? And I'm glad it's worked out for some people. And this weekend I'm be giving a talk at the Kickapoo Country Fair, which is put on and organized by Organic Valley, and that's also in Lafarge. I'm going to be in Lafarge two consecutive weekends, which is not a bad thing.
No.
You've been in Lafarge and explore the Kickapoo Reserve. It's just a beautiful area down there, so I'm really excited. I'll be leading a couple plant walks and giving a presentation down there.
And probably you should tell us a little bit more about how the book is organized. I'm sure listeners are wondering what to expect. I mean, beautiful photography, but go ahead and talk about it.
Sure. What my goal was with both Nature's Garden and Forager's Harvest was I wanted to cover plants in a level of detail that other books didn't cover them, the kind of detail where a beginner would feel comfortable to actually go out and use the plant. So I have anywhere from 4 to 15 pages per plant, depending on how much there is to say about it and how intricate the preparation might be. And I only included plants if I've eaten these plants many times, like not something I tried a few times or did some book research, plants that I eat every year and have been eating every year for a long time. And so I began with kind of a story of my experience with the plant, and then I go into some detail with the identification and preparation and harvest methods and conservation and sometimes the natural history or the cultural history of the plants. I try to make it fun to read, exciting to read, but also all the information is there. So it's kind of a combination of literary and science that I don't find too often, but I really appreciate.
Yeah.
And then interspersed in there is the photographs, which I've tried to get a photograph of the plant in every important stage for identification, or, you know, rather than just one photograph to represent the plant, I want to show the stage at which you harvest it. And my other subtle message is I try to show like really big, juicy, good-looking plants. So I'm trying to get across the message that this is food. You know, this is great. You know, I want mouth-watering photos, and so that's what I've tried to do.
Yeah, and you have succeeded for sure. We really a wonderful book.
Yeah, and there's no overlap to the plants that are covered in the two books. People often ask me, which one should I get to start? And it doesn't really matter. They both have the same introductory material, but they just cover different plants in the same way.
And I think we have a link to on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to your site, so people can order that way or go directly to your site as well.
Yeah, or just support your local bookseller. There's quite a few bookstores around the state have it.
And Mark sent a note on the Facebook page. We're hiking Pattison State Park in a week. Any suggestions for foraging?
Well, you know, there's a few blueberries at Pattison State Park, but the raspberries will be in season. And again, in the Wisconsin State Parks, for your own personal consumption, you are allowed to pick berries while you're in the park. And However, up in that Lake Superior belt, you'll have thimbleberries. And if you're not from that area of the state, you might not be familiar with them. Thimbleberries are found in the Rocky Mountains, and then there's a isolated population kind of circling the northern Great Lakes. And so they kind of are most common near Lake Superior, and they become progressively less common as you travel away from Lake Superior. And they're also very common in Door County. And Patterson State Park has a lot of thimbleberry. The berry looks like a large raspberry, but the leaf is like a giant, soft, fuzzy maple leaf. It's anywhere from 5 to 9 inches across, and the bushes tend to be about waist to chest high. That description should be enough. I mean, it's like a giant raspberry with big maple-like leaves. Delicious berry. Now, some people don't like them, but if you ask around in thimbleberry country, there's probably no berry that more commonly people will claim is their favorite berry. And I'd have to say, just on pure flavor, it's probably my favorite, too. So if you've never tried that, you'll see them at Patterson and give it a try.
Kathleen in Palmyra, on to you now. Hi, Kathleen.
Well, good morning. I very much look forward to getting these books. I'm sort of a foolish forager. And also, I'm starving now. Thank you. I have a comment and a question. My comment is I had never really foraged for food, but when I was foraging at Penzi's, they gave me some sumac, an herb to cook with. Lovely powder, of course, the color of the lovely sumac that we see all along the roadsides here. And it's fabulous. I'd never known you could eat sumac in that way. It tastes like lemony salt. Great on chicken, great on fish. And I'm wondering if I went and just got the sumac when it was in full bloom, can I knock the powder off? Is that all that is? That's my comment question.
Okay. Now, the sumac powder that you buy commercially comes from a Middle Eastern species. So sumacs have been used all over the world. And you wouldn't be able to get a similar powder very easily from our sumacs.
Okay.
With the possible exception of the fragrant sumac, which the berry is more fleshy, because what that powder is actually the dried flesh of the berry. And our sumac, the common ones, staghorn and smooth sumac, they don't really have much of any flesh. And so if you dry them and try to powder them, what you'll get is a sticky substance on your hands.
Okay.
Sometimes, particularly the smooth sumac, you'll find the berry head covered with, it's going to sound not very good, but it'll be covered with this white, slimy stuff.
Oh.
This is just the exudate from the berries. This is the flavoring compound. When you see that white, sticky, slimy stuff all over the berry cluster, that means there's a ton of flavor in there. And you can actually, like, scrape that up, and you can, you know, it's like sumac concentrate, but it's not... it won't ever take the form of the powder that you can buy commercially. So the flavor is similar, but the physical form that it comes in is not
different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not the same.
Okay. And may I ask one more question, a berry question?
Sure.
There was a tree growing out here, and I was standing underneath it, and the berries looked really inviting, and they were at the perfect peak about 2 weeks ago. It's a smallish tree, about 15, 18 feet high. And the berries on it looked like very small blueberries, and the tree was just burgeoning with it. And I had to taste one, and then I had to eat like 18 of them. And it tasted sort of a cross between a blueberry and, oddly, a raisin. And the center was a little bit crunchy. I've never seen it before, and then I thought, ooh, I'm in a neighborhood with a lot of birds that didn't eat any of these. I should have done my homework.
It's definitely you need to be identifying stuff before you eat it. But from your description, it sounds almost certain that it was serviceberry or juneberry.
Yeah.
One of the things about berry picking is it's one of the forms of foraging that's considered most, quote, normal, and it's probably one of the safest because berries advertise their edibility through their flavor, and by no means am I suggesting that people eat things without knowing what they are, but people sometimes do what the caller did, which she shouldn't have done, and she might feel a little sheepish, but people sometimes do that, and I've tasted berries, knowing what they are, that aren't edible, and most of them taste really bad. Whereas something like a service berry that's good, it's just advertising itself. It's begging to be eaten. Once somebody tastes one, they know, oh, I can eat this because it's the best thing I've had all month, you know. But, yeah, definitely need to identify things before I eat them.
And thanks very much for calling, Kathleen. Appreciate it. And Becky and Marinette will give you a chance. Hi, Becky.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
We're building a cabin up here. I'm actually from Oshkosh, but she put down Marinette because that's where we're building. We have a plant that grows up there, and it looks like a marijuana plant when it starts. I know it's not, and then it gets a pretty flower on it. Now, I don't know if that's a herb or if it's a weed.
What color is the flower?
I believe it's kind of a whitish color.
You know, it's hard to say from just that description. There's a lot of plants that leaves will resemble marijuana leaves, and which of those many it could be, I would need a little bit more detailed of a description. You know, cinquefoil, a lot of people think that it has, you know, five leaves when it first comes up, but that has a yellow flower. So I'm not sure. I don't know if you remember any other details of the plant.
Well, it is fuzzy. But when it starts out, it's not smooth. And we're in sand country, so it, you know, definitely it thrives there.
And what does the flower look like?
I'm trying to remember what they look like. I do have photos, and there's, you know, quite a few plants or seeds.
Well, you could email me a photo. Go to my website and get my address. You could email me a photo. I try to not do that too many times, but, you know, and I can, sometimes I'm hesitant to identify a plant if it's a poor photo, you know, over the internet. that would be better, because sometimes it is hard to envision and remember what you
saw. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I see it all the time when we're up there, but, you know, in different phases that it's in. But that seems to grow real hardy up there.
And give me some information, too, about, like, the soil and what, you know, the conditions, the time of year you took the photo, that kind of stuff when you send the email.
Okay.
And then the email address, I'm sorry, I don't know.
It's sam@foragersharvest.com.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for calling. And while you're at it, Becky, post that same photo up on our Facebook page, because I know right now there are a lot of people wondering, wonder what that is and wonder what that looks like, and it would be fun to see it. So if you could post it on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, that would be great. Sam, always a pleasure. The time flew. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the time always does fly.
Oh,
with you,
man, it goes too fast. Well, we'll have you back.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sam Thayer, author of Nature's Garden, A Guide to Identifying, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants, our guest. And boy, doesn't he know a lot, I'm telling you. He is amazing when it comes to wild plants and edible wild plants in general. Well, our next guests know a lot about Wisconsin forests, and we'll talk about Wisconsin forests and sustainability and how our forests relate to bioenergy. That next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.